Chapter 17 Constancy. I pray daily for all the members of my church, and hope and pray they will lead in healing the sick more than in teaching or church making. Mary Baker Eddy, 1904. The genesis of the change in teaching Christian Science can be seen in Mrs. Eddy's letter to Edward A. Kimball of November 26, 1903, wherein she had written, quote, "Our cause demands better healers, and if less teaching classes is enjoined, more practitioners will be fitted by the book to heal," end quote. By January, she was thinking in terms of rotation in office for the teacher of the Board of Education. However, the Board of Education was only one of the many things demanding the leader's attention at the dawn of 1904. She may have written to other students, as she did to Augusta Stetson, on the first day of the new year. My beloved student, on this first day of the new year, I send you my love and prayers for the divine love's rich blessings to enfold you in the arms of his protective wisdom and guidance. Ever yours, tenderly. On January 8th, she wrote to her trustee, William P. McKenzie, of her publishing society, "I gave my CS journal to the Publishing Society on the grounds that it should be well conducted, etc. Now I ask you to see that we have more that is understandable and interesting to the general public. No matter about the cost of it, but I insist that such writers as Judge Jones, M.K. Keynes, Mr. Samuel Greenwood, Mrs. Mims of Atlanta, Edward A. Kimball, Reverend Vosburgh, etc., be employed and paid as contributors to our periodicals, and constant contributions be had from them." On a Saturday in January, the leader called Mr. Kimball to Pleasant View and told him about her idea for rotation in office for the teacher of the Board of Education. He wrote her the next week, "3 years ago you told me that you were very desirous of getting Judge Hanna out of office and out of Boston. I resolved that if I ever got the slightest hint of the kind concerning myself, I would make short work of it by speedily getting out of the way. The problem which you had with Judge Hanna was solved by a bylaw which terminated his official tenure and precluded by means of the 3-year rule the possibility of his continuance. Last Saturday you told me you were going to put into effect the same rule concerning the teacher of the Board of Education. And I construe this as a possible hint to me. Considering our educational system, which is in great need of uniformity and stability, I hardly think you would provide for frequent changes in the teaching, except because of unusual stress. The annals of the race make no mention of anyone whose tasks were so severe, so continuous and complex as yours are. I greatly long for your peace, for the more tranquil flow of your life, and I want you to know, my dear, dear friend, that there is not an atom of disposition on my part to stand in the way. You do not need to take any unusual or radical step on my account, dear mother. I know what it means to ascend the cross and have the nails driven into me. The one who craves position, power, or emolument in the cause of Christian Science is mad. There is nothing that I want except a chance to pray and repent. Your ways are higher than mine, and I do not clearly see the way. The leader seldom told her students why she took the steps she took. She followed the direction from God, sometimes not knowing herself, until afterward why she was directed to take a certain course. Even when she did know, she never tried to explain her actions to her students, knowing that those who cared enough to trace her footsteps would find out her reasons for themselves in due time. Her ways were higher than those of her students. Those endeavoring to make their own ways higher can appreciate the words she wrote to one of her secretaries on January 21st. Quote, "I have no hope in earthly ways and means. God has pointed my path higher. Oh, for the eagle's wings, the power divine, to mount to thee." End quote. Many of the lessons Mrs. Eddy gave to her household in January were on watching and learning what watching means. A letter to Augusta Stetson on January 20th could have been in response to the leader's message from God when she opened her Bible that morning. It was a watch message to Augusta. Do you recognize the need you have to watch and pray that your true sense of God and of His anointed be not taken away from you? Read Jesus' words to Peter when he said, "Satan desired so-and-so." Watch, darling, that you be not demoralized as some others are, to forget your duty to me, who has laid herself on the altar and all of this world for you and for all, to serve Christ and to drink his cup for the salvation of the race. May God in his dear love hold you in his arms, show you the way, and enable you to see the temptation and to overcome it, is the prayer of her who loves you and who cannot lose her love for you through temptation. Mrs. Stetson was not the only student who received messages to watch, and often the watches sent to her best and most earnest and dedicated students were requests to work on some specific problem. She wrote to Hannah Larmony that the cause would have been lost if such watches had not been kept in Boston. The righteous prayers the leader sent to several students she denominated, quote, "watch prayers," end quote, in accordance with Jesus' instructions, quote, "And what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch," end quote. Mark 13, verse 37, quote, "And this know, that if the good man of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not have suffered his house to be broken through," end quote. Luke 12, verse 39. The chosen students in Boston who worked thus for the cause were called watchers, and following is a watch prayer they were using early in 1904. The Prayer of the Watchers. The effect of this prayer is not reversed. God, good, reigns. There is no other mind. Love reigns. There is no envy, no revenge. All things are working together for good to those that love good. We do love good, God, and He gives us all our thoughts and governs all our acts. The divine love preserves our life and health, and they cannot be taken from Christian Scientists, and Christian Scientists cannot be made sinful. We love God, and God loves us, and is guiding us every moment. This prayer cannot be reversed. This prayer bears fruit after its own kind. It does good and blesses us and all others. Charge them not to change, add to, or diminish this prayer. Something is out of tune. This will be a chord. This watch prayer, together with the instruction for the watchers, was sent to William B. Johnson, but its use was discontinued on March 6th because another of her officials in Boston was managing the watchers to some extent, which she said must not be done. On the 3rd of March, Mrs. Eddy had executed another deed covering two of the parcels of land on which the extension was to be built. This deed included the further trusts regarding, quote, no new tenant or bylaw, end quote, and, quote, Mary Baker G. Eddy's church, end quote, already included in some of the other deeds. In addition, it included this further stipulation. Nothing in this deed contained shall ever be construed as a waiver or as permitting a modification in any degree of any of the trusts and conditions, as the same are now established and exist under and by virtue of the deeds above described. I do further declare that nothing herein contained shall ever be construed as a waiver or as permitting a modification in any degree of the further trusts set forth in deed of Albert Metcalf to Ira O. Knapp and others dated March 19, 1903. The leader was giving much thought to the future of her church, but she was also required to give her attention to its present status. At the time of the building of the original Mother Church, mortal man was determined that the founder should neither buy nor sell nor build without the mark of the beast. But God led her in the wording of her deed of trust to bind mortal man. During the controversy that ensued, she wrote to Augusta Stetson, "It is just awful that the trustees have not started to build our church. The land I conveyed for the perpetual use of this church is now valued at $20,000. God has so arranged this conveyance that while the enemy saith, quote, none shall buy or sell that hath not the mark of the beast, end quote, he saith, none shall sell that hath the mark of the Lamb. And this is the poser to future speculation over my lot and the church building that troubles the builder. A fierce battle was waged, and one of her trustees left in wrath, but the spiritual foundation was firm and stood fast, and every step of the building of the edifice was a demonstration. Now, in 1904, these founding footsteps in stone needed further protection, for it would appear that the architects were entertaining the idea of tearing down the original Mother Church edifice in their plans for the extension. On March 18th, the leader sent this message to Henrietta Shafrau. Take up the architects that God may open their eyes to the terrible sin they contemplate. The Mother Church is founded on truth and cannot be removed nor taken down. Mother knows days and nights of anguished prayer that none know aught of, lest the sheepfold be taken down wherein the lambs are sheltered. Weary in days of trial, but freshened in his service, she waits till all unworthy ones come neath the shadow of his wing. In addition to having students work for the architects, the mother felt it necessary to protect her mother church edifice, erected in 1894, with a bylaw, manual page 103, which was published in the Sentinel early in March. On March 11th, when Mrs. Eddy was occupied with these church concerns, Calvin Fry answered an urgent but sad letter from Reverend Tomlinson regarding a case of death. If the case was under my care, I should make careful examination to find out if there is not a faint trace of life there before removing the remains by the employment of an expert, because the case was peculiar. The case was that of Mrs. Mary Monroe, who had first studied with Mrs. Eddy more than 20 years earlier and had been an earnest worker in the cause ever since. She and her husband had purchased one of the lots of land for the extension and held it until the directors were ready for it. At the time of her passing away in 1904, Mrs. Monroe was a member of the most vital of the committees, the Bible Lesson Committee. The leader sent to her editor a song, poem, page 3, which she had written many years earlier for publication in the next journal. Constancy. When starlight blends with morning's hue, I miss thee as the flower the dew. When noonday's lengthening shadows flee, I think of thee, I think of thee. With evening memories reappear, I watch thy chair and wish thee here, till sleep sets drooping fancy free to dream of thee, to dream of thee. Since first we met, in weal or woe, it hath been thus, and must be so, till bursting bonds our spirits part, and love divine doth fill my heart. Mrs. Eddy was very appreciative of Mr. Fry, and all the work he did for her and the cause. In her lesson to her household on February 16th, she had said, "We say spirit is all, and then when we have to take our choice between spirit and the flesh, we cry, 'The flesh, the flesh.' God is coming very near to us, is making demands upon us. Mr. Fry made his choice 21 years ago, and since then has been having his experience, and if he should pass now, would waken to glorified being." In a notebook she kept, Mrs. Eddy wrote, quote, March 12, 1904, "I gave as a present to Calvin A. Fry $5,000, Mary B. G. Eddy," end quote. On the same day, Calvin recorded in his diary, quote, "Mrs. Eddy presented me today with a check for $5,000, saying, when she handed it to me, 'This is a love gift, Calvin,'" end quote. But neither Calvin nor any other student had the wisdom and perspicacity of the leader. On the 12th of January, she had written to Blissnap that she wanted him to become a lecturer. Bliss had graduated from Harvard 3 years before and had what he described as, quote, an extreme case of bashfulness, end quote. Calvin Fry warned Mrs. Eddy that it was a mistake to place one so young and timid and fearful on the board of lectureship, but she knew better. Although she did not know what would transpire before his appointment on May 5th. At the age of 20, Carol Norton had been healed of a serious illness by one Christian Science treatment and almost as immediately had left a thriving business to devote himself to the study and practice of Christian Science. He was only 27 years of age when the Board of Lectureship was formed in 1898, and Mrs. Eddy appointed him one of the five first lecturers. He was a successful, popular lecturer and had covered a good deal of territory on his tours, speaking to large audiences and small, from Maine to California, and also up into Canada. Mr. Norton was in Chicago early in April when news came to Boston that he had died suddenly. Mrs. Eddy wrote to Mr. McClellan, "Have a short, true, impressive obituary in your next issue of our weekly and monthly of our beloved student, friend, brother, Carol Norton." Sister thoughts to the song she had published so recently for Mrs. Monroe came to the leader, and she wrote this poem, poem number 25, which was published in the Sentinel of May 21st. Flowers, mirrors of morn, whence the dewdrop is born. Soft tints of the rainbow and skies, sisters of song, what a shadowy throng around you in memory rise. Far do ye flee from your green bowers free, fair floral apostles of love, sweetly to shed fragrance fresh round the dead and breath of the living above. Flowers for the brave, be he monarch or slave, whose heart bore its grief and is still. Flowers for the kind. Aye, the Christians who wind wreaths for the triumphs or ill. This was probably written for Carol Norton's sweet wife of only 3 years, who was doubly bereaved, for she had lost her baby very shortly before the loss of her husband. But the leader did more for the stricken young widow. She sent for Mrs. Norton that she might comfort her. In later years, Elizabeth Norton recalled that meeting at Pleasant View. "I shall never forget the first time I talked with her. She had sent for me to call upon her. On entering the room, she extended her hand and asked me to be seated. I walked across the room and sat down in a chair. Mrs. Eddy very deliberately arranged her dress and sat down on a sofa. She looked at me so tenderly, and patting the sofa beside herself, she said, quote, 'You are too far away from Mother, darling,' end quote. I immediately went to her. She took me in her arms and kissed me. She was not afraid to express her love humanly, and I did not mistake it, for I learned then and there that divine love must be expressed humanly in order to heal the brokenhearted. Oh, let us all learn to love as did this precious Christ idea. Let us love her because she first loved us by teaching us that life is love and love is life. She is our mother in Israel and is still saying to us all, quote, "You are too far away from mother, darling," end quote. The mother in Israel sent a letter of instruction to her board of directors on April 9th, in which she said, "I recommend that you fill the vacancy on lesson committee with Mrs. Knott. She will have time apart from her office as assistant editor to fill this office of our late lamented sister. For lecturer to take the place of the dear departed Mr. Norton, I name Mr. Clarence A. Buskirk of Princeton, Indiana. Watch the field. It needs watching. There is not time for the new teacher in the Board of Education to get up a class in May next. Write Mr. Kimball that he must teach this class." But neither Mr. Kimball nor any other teacher taught a Board of Education class in May, for the leader's attention was demanded by another issue, and she needed Mr. Kimball's help in that direction. Following the World's Parliament of Religions at the World's Fair in Chicago in 1893, opposition from other Christian denominations intensified. Mrs. Eddy had written in one of her letters at that time, "The Catholic priests call at my door and demand to know if I have any Catholic help. All the help of that kind I have had, they take away from me. It would seem since the World's Fair that they are afraid of the power of Christian Scientists and would exterminate the leader." In April of 1904, Mrs. Eddy received a letter from the Pope in Rome asking her to have her followers stop teaching, quote, his subjects, end quote, Christian Science. He also stated that he was sending his emissary to see her. The mother in Israel called her emissary, Edward A. Kimball, to Pleasant View and instructed him for his mission to New York, which was to intercept the Roman Catholic Cardinal when he arrived in that city and to dispose of the issue there. The settling of the issue was the new bylaw the leader wrote, Manual, page 87, which appeared in the Sentinel of April 30th. Quote, "Neither the pastor emeritus nor a member of this church shall teach Roman Catholics Christian Science, except it be with the written consent of the authority of their church," end quote. We have covered only a tithe of the issues demanding the leader's attention early in 1904. Everything the mother in Israel said or did was challenged and lied about by the world. The serpent was ever at the heel of the woman. One minor issue was a McNeil ancestor. When Mrs. Eddy first wrote her autobiographical Retrospection and Introspection, it began with, quote, "Voices Not Our Own," end quote, which is now the 8th page, and it continued that way through several editions for several years. The 7 pages about her family and ancestors was a later addition, perhaps to refute the lies heaped upon her and her background. She sent the following, which was published in the March 12, 1904 Sentinel, to editor McClellan, telling him to sign his name if agreeable and send no more proof. A correction. Some years ago, a relative of our leader and teacher, the Reverend Mary Baker G. Eddy, a member of the McNeil family, from which Mrs. Eddy descended, reported that the Right Honorable Sir John McNeil, G.C.B., of Edinburgh, Scotland, was her ancestor. The source of information seemed to be authentic, and the statement was accepted and used in good faith by writers on Mrs. Eddy's genealogy. Mrs. Eddy has had this matter carefully investigated, and having obtained no positive proof that the Right Honorable Sir John McNeil was her ancestor, she requests that all others writing upon her biography shall in future observe this correction. General John McNeil, who is known as the hero of Lundy's Lane, was a relative on Mrs. Eddy's father's side of the Baker family, and he was the brother of President Pierce's mother. This is probably the line of McNeils to which Mrs. Eddy belongs. Mrs. Eddy herself has no special interest in these subjects. Archibald McClellan. It is interesting to note that though Mrs. Eddy wrote the above to appease the challenges of the world, she did not change her statement regarding her McNeil ancestry in retrospection and introspection. The world would keep the woman always answering its challenges and lies, ever endeavoring to keep her away from God's work if it could. A month before the McNeil question, she had written McClellan on another issue. In this instance, you had better take no notice of those clippings from newspapers, and thus stop the matter. A reply will invite new charges or attempts to vindicate those already made. But later the same day, she wrote him again, quote, "I enclose your article so that you can publish it if the newspapers keep up firing. It is well prepared, and you may have to use it." End quote. For nearly a decade, thousands of people had visited and or attended Mrs. Eddy's church in Boston. During that same period, a handful of people had found her, quote, "structure of truth and love," end quote, at Pleasant View, the hub of the wheel, the center of all spiritual activity. This center of spiritual activity was her true church, and was not found in the beautiful edifice in Boston or any other city. At a later date, Mrs. Eddy said to her household at Pleasant View, quote, "There is one thing needed all over the field, and which is only supplied here, and might not be supplied in the field in centuries." End quote. Pleasant View was a citadel safeguarding her spiritual church. In 1903, Mrs. Eddy had begun making the manual her citadel for the safeguarding of her spiritual church in future generations. And on March 11th in 1904, her last deed stating that, quote, "nothing shall ever be construed as a waiver or as permitting a modification in any degree," end quote, was recorded. This deed also tied these restrictions to the deed from Metcalf to Knapp, et al. In the manual. Mrs. Eddy knew that Calvin Fry and the others named in her will could not continue Pleasant View as she ran it. Now that the manual was her citadel for the future, she could release the future of Pleasant View, which she did on May 14th, with another codicil to her will. One of the new bylaws in the spring of 1904 was intended to keep Christian Scientists spreading the gospel to all the world, rather than talking only to one another. When a group of New York businessmen formed a New York Christian Science Lunch Club, which invited prominent scientists to address their luncheon meetings, Mrs. Eddy wrote to the Lathrops, John and his mother, Laura, quote, "If you go into clubs, you go out of the church in spirit," end quote. This was followed by a bylaw, Article 26, in the April 23rd Sentinel, titled Church Organization Ample, Section 14. Members of the Mother Church shall not be made members of clubs or organizations, the Freemasons excepted, which exclude either sex or are not named in the manual of the Mother Church. God separates the tares and the wheat to garner the latter in his storehouse. A card published 3 weeks later stated, thanking the courteous Christian Science lunchers for their respectful attention to our denominational bylaw on clubs and organizations, I beg to say, said bylaw prohibits neither informal meetings nor luncheons and select invited guests. Mary B. G. Eddy, May 6, 1904. This new bylaw caused a good deal of consternation, together with a great many resignations, causing Mrs. Eddy to issue this further notice. I beg to inform my beloved members of the Mother Church that the bylaw in Article 26 of its manual does not require members of the benevolent and progressive organizations such as the Freemasons, Odd Fellows, Temperance Societies, and those of similar cult to resign their membership. It specifies in plain English that after individuals become members of our church, they shall not thereafter, quote, be made, end quote, members of clubs or other organizations not named in his manual. And wherefore? Because our religious denomination demands the faithful attention and labor of its members in all philanthropic, therapeutic, and progressive Christian work for the human race, and relies upon the adequate scientific source and resource, therefore. The press remarked freely and usually quite critically upon everything that Mrs. Eddy said or did. But upon this bylaw, there was a good deal of favorable press comment. The following from the Topeka Daily Herald. Viewed wholly from the standpoint of church management, this ruling makes an interesting study. At a time when the Orthodox churches of this country have had a very hard time to make any pronounced growth, the Christian Science Church has, in a little over 30 years, secured 1 million adherents and built some of the most valuable church property in existence. That its material growth and development are due more to the wisdom of Mrs. Eddy than to any other cause is very generally conceded. As a church builder, she has proven herself to be a genius. For this reason, any new method adopted by the church, of which she is the accepted head, becomes of interest to those who seek the cause for retarded growth in other churches. In May, Mr. Johnson wrote to Mrs. Eddy, asking permission to resume the watch prayer that had been discontinued on March 6th. He stated that since its discontinuance, the death rate of church members had been very high. Mrs. Eddy stated in her response, "Have the watchers use that prayer so long as it works well. I find that the law of mesmerism that relies on reversing the effect of truth is sometimes forgotten, and in this case it does not work well. Please have the dear watchers resume the prayer you sent to me at once and charge them to let no one know it but yourself." Mr. Carpenter, who preserved this record, added an interesting comment. Quote, "It will always be helpful to know that in those early days, a few watchers working in the one mind could help to destroy the fear of death for the entire organization, as long as they handled the claim of reversal." End quote. There was no Board of Education class held in May of 1904. But there was a very interesting notice in the Sentinel of May 14th entitled, quote, "Christian Science Board of Education," end quote, which also appeared in the June Journal. The first paragraph has been reprinted in Miscellany, beginning on page 246, line 30. The closing paragraph reads, "The long term of the incumbent teacher in the Board of Education, Mr. Edward A. Kimball, CSD, expires in June next, when he retires crowned with honors, his teacher and leader loving him, his students praising him, and the race benefited by his labors. May his successor go and do likewise." By this statement, the leader was solidifying the status of Mr. Kimball and his teaching for all time to come. But the future of her Board of Education was still undecided.